Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So bottom of page 12. The yogi should meditate upon the cosmos as the Virat Rupa, or universal form, of the Lord. Success in this meditation certainly entails coming to the Vasudeva Sattva platform, in which Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Shri Krishna in his Vasudeva form is perceived to be everything, such as the knowledge of one who is perfected, Kshetrajna. As Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to 13.3 Bhagavad Gita, while every soul situated within a material body may be termed kshetrajna, knower of the field of activities, or the living entity who is aware of a particular body, the question remains whether that living entity actually understands correctly what he is aware of. Quote, one who does not understand the field of activity and the knower of activity, writes His Divine Grace, is not in perfect knowledge. In a Srimad Bhagavatam lecture given in Bombay on 8th November 1974, Srila Prabhupada explained, if there is some wrong in the electric line, I cannot repair it. I call one mystery. He knows the art. He immediately revives the electric current. So this sort of knowledge is called silpa, silpa jnana, artistic knowledge. That is not knowledge. Real knowledge is Vedic knowledge. Vedanta knowledge, to know oneself, what I am, what is God, Bhagavan, what is my relation with Him, and what is my duty, and what is the ultimate goal of life. This knowledge, etaj jnanam tad agyanam anyata, anyata yata. Krishna says, this is jnanam, Bhagavad Gita 13.12. Kshetra, kshetragya, kshetram, kshetragyam, jnanam. What is this material world? Why have we come here? What is my relation with God? What is my relation with this world? This is knowledge. They are called Jnanavan. So Prabhupada is pointing out what actual knowledge is. Because generally we take, if you're dealing in a realm of where there isn't knowledge, because here we're saying knowledge means the Vedic knowledge, what is connected to the Vedas, the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That's knowledge. Anything else is not knowledge. So if you don't have that, then what is not knowledge you'll call knowledge. Does that make sense? I was told before this that every day we would sit at this one place and watch. It was a big people tree. And this goat would come every day. And it would come through three times in a day. In the morning it would come through, and only the softest leaves it would chew, and it would chew them up to the where it gets to the little stem, and then very deftly with his teeth it would just kind of like bite it off and it would fall to the ground. Then it would come around at noontime, and they would now pick up whatever leaves are there, but they would still not eat the stem. Then they would come through in the evening time, and any leaf they could find, including the stem, they would eat. Does that make sense? So the point is that we adjust our perspective to what is actually our situation. So when you don't have any knowledge, then ignorance is called knowledge, right? So therefore, knowledge is defined as basically just facts, so-called, according to somebody's perception. They call these facts. But Prabhupada's pointing out here, if it's not connected to Krishna, you know, the science of the soul and God, it's not knowledge. Right? So technically the Vedas describe paravidya, which means transcendental knowledge. Right? That's Vedanta. That directly connects to the Lord. So Vedanta, Pancharatra, Bhagavad Gita, like this. These are Bhagavatam. This is transcendental knowledge. Then aparavidya means not transcendental, but it's Vedic, right? And it's connected to the transcendental. Then that will be all the other branches. You know, your grammar, your logic, your, you know, how you say, mathematics, astronomy, astrology, dharma shastras, anything like this. This is all called aparavidya. But it's meant to be directly used in the service of para. Does that make sense? The same body of knowledge not connected to the Lord is called avidya, or ignorance. The same exact body of knowledge. Right? You take astrology, you connect it to Krishna, it's called aparavidya. You don't connect it to Krishna, exact same knowledge, same person, it's called avidya, or an ignorance. Let alone that which is not based on the Veda at all. Right? It's avidya, and it's not, it's already ignorance to start with, and it's not connected. Of course, one may ask, if we connect it, then yes, okay. But the point is being made, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's not real knowledge. This is very important point. Because otherwise, we take any body of knowledge and kind of put it on the same level. I mean, of course we don't. If I directly ask somebody, so do you think the Bhagavatam class is on the same level as the, life skills seminar that this one devotee is running? Would they be on the same level? If we did that, we would say no. But in practical life, we sometimes see it's yes. Does that make sense? It's unspoken. Everybody just goes to it. It's education. But there's different kinds of education. That's an art. If it's not based on Shastra, it's an art. Because art means it's based on the senses. Right? Yes, please.
I just wanted to continue leading to the end of this. Because you stopped...
At 1.5. No, I stopped at 1.5.
You went all the way down.
I read
that. There's something wrong in the electric line.
Yeah, yeah.
You read that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that's where we're taking the point from.
Okay.
The Silpi Gyan artistic
all
knowledge.
Right, then I just have... I was just with. I came late because I was just had the good fortune of having a talk with His Holiness Bhakti Sri Maharaj, and so he was asking about this course, and what I ended up speaking about with him and explaining the purpose behind it. I think it's very valuable that I share it with you because. In the last couple times I did talk, I was referring to what's going on in the outside world, how many inroads into the intellectual sphere of our present society are being made by representatives of Vedic Shastra who are not, what speak of not following Srila Prabhupada, they're not even Vaishnavas. And some of them are of say unspeakable orientations, yet are there, there's a classification for them in the most tamasic areas of worship. And what is being presented as Vaishnavism is just sahajism. Because these kind of people are presenting it. So basically, you know, everything is smeared over with Mayavadi philosophy. Basically, they're Mayavadis. And basically, Mayavadis are Shaivites or Buddhists. That's if you do press them for Nishta Devata, it's going to be something like that. Shaivism or Buddha, or they may be Shaktis, worshippers of Durga. not Vaishnavas. Not real Vaishnavas. And of course the sahajyas are persons who have claimed Lord Krishna as their Ishta Devata, and yet the process, the avideya is not there at all. All they have done is grafted on these so-called dharmas or pujas or whatever forms of meditation coming out of Rajagun. Because Srila, for example, Srila Prabhupada will tell us here in the second canon that the impersonalists are dominated by Rajaguna and Tamaguna. So that is the best thing they can do. You see? That's why Shukadeva Goswami actually, you see him recommending that qualified. If you can't do pure Hari Bhajan, then you can meditate on the Virat Rupa. And this is interesting, I make this point later on in the study guide, that even there, the impersonal has form. Because the Virat Rupa, that is the form of the Lord, just like it says in the Brahma Sanhita, Yasya Prabha Prabhyo Jagananda Koti, out of his Prabha, his effulgence, are coming all the universes. So in actual fact, there is, when we speak of the avyakta, which Srila Prabhupada often takes to be a synonym for Brahma Jyoti or the impersonal state, what is avyakta? It is simply means the potential for avyakta. It just means that it is being conserved within the form of the Lord, who is beyond everyone's capacity to understand. That's particularly Krishna's position. That's why he's called Achincha. His form cannot be understood by any other process except revelation through his pure devotee. You see? And revelation means by sound, of course, by pure sound vibration emanating from the lotus lips of pure devotee. So I was, I just want to. I hope I don't want to make anyone here feel intellectually disoriented, but I use these terms in my conversation with Bhakti Chirmanaj, and I want to repeat them here. They come from the Greek language, so I may not be familiar with them, but there is a very easy way to understand them in terms of our philosophy, and I will explain that. So there's the macrocosm. I think many of you already know what that means. That means the great universe, which is very much a subject of Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto. That's very much a fifth canto, of course, but that's these. I'll tell you, as I was saying to Bhakti Chumrasa, at least a half a dozen, but, you know, it just come to mind, descriptions of the universe throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. None of them are the same. Because all of them are forms of Krishna, and how many forms does Krishna have? So that's one thing. But anyway, there is the macrocosm, and then there's that's the great cosm. You might be interested, particularly ladies might be interested to know that the old Greek word cosm means actually arrangement. So in the sense of the arrangement of reality, it means cosmos. But when a woman arranges her hair and puts on, you know, nice clothes, that's called cosmetic. And you come from this exact same source. And when you apply this to the Lord, you can understand this universe is simply like a cosmetic appearance. That's what the Virat Rupa is. It's a cosmetic or external appearance of Krishna. You see? That can be helpful for us to meditate on. That's why it's given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then there's what's called the mesocosm. Meso means middle. So, what is that? That is the human society. And there is also a corresponding form of the Lord. That is called Varna Ashram Dharma. So the Lord appears as mesocosm also. And then, and this is the point that I really want to stress, because in the other days I was speaking in macrocosmic and mesocosmic terms, you know, about preaching and what scientists are saying and how the Vedas are, you know, making great inroads in Western intellectual areas, but no one's heard of ISKCON and so on and so forth. And to be frank, I got some feedback from one devotee who's not a regular attendee here, but he does know what's going on. So he actually just said to me, but what does that have to do with me? Because he's a grihastha, he's a very good grihastha, but he's all, you know, caught up with his And he does preaching, but he's mostly caught up with his griha affairs, and that is his dharma. So then I was talking with Bhakti Chumar. Then there is the microcosm. Microcosm, there's a Vedic word for that, Chudra Brahmanda, which means within each one of us there is the universe. And there are purports, I do believe I quote them later on, in which Srila Prabhupada confirms this. And there are some, actually the Bhagavatam gives a very great deal of information about this if you understand it by understanding this first canto as foundation. And then you can understand that everything that else that follows in terms of creation, the demigods, the Trimurti, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, that is also existing, all of it, within us. And of course there's now there's one class of, again, speaking of other classes of representatives of the Vedic scriptures, you've surely heard of the tantrics, and of course a lot of times they get a bad reputation because there are different kinds of them, but in any case they're, all of them are simply very much concerned with the microcosm, and that in itself is a mistake, you see. This form of mysticism where you isolate yourself from the mesocosm and the macrocosm and you're just meditating, because actually there are the Prabhupada does mention the chakras in the Gita and the Bhagavatam. That's a fact, they are there. Not only that, there are points, 14 points along the spine where the subtle nadis meet together, and they correspond with the 14 planetary systems. And you all know from the Bhagavatam, it's clearly stated, all the devatas reside within the human body. So this is each, for each one of us, you see, the Bhagavatam can become a personal guide to our life. So I don't want to, you know, to... I felt a real need to say this to you because of, you know, I realized that maybe the things I've been saying the other day might have made some persons left out. So you need not be left out, feel yourself left out, because, well, you know, I don't know any scientists to preach to either. You know, I don't know anything about this, and how, you know, I don't even know where to begin. All right, but if you master this science for yourself, if you can understand scientifically from the Bhagavatam, how this bhakti, and this is exactly what Shukadeva Goswami is preaching in this second canto, how bhakti yoga is the best yoga for getting this kshudra brahmanda, this little universe that we're all living in perfect order, in perfect harmony with Krishna's will. And until we come to that point, then we are always going to have trouble with the modes of nature. The impure sattva-guna, what does that mean? It's the type of sattva-guna that degrades into raja-guna and tamo-guna. So, we feel sattvic sometimes, we feel very enthusiastic, yes, I'm going to chant my rounds, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And after a few days, what happens? What happens? What generally happens is we feel on the edge of our consciousness this boredom creeping in. Now, what is boredom? That's the tamoguna. So you see that the sattva guna is that material sattva which becomes polluted due to circumstances, due to association, easily polluted by tamoguna in the sense of boredom, you know, or in the sense of egoism, accomplishment. I've chanted so many good rounds, you know, in the last week. Today I can slack off a little bit. You know, I mean, I've done so much good service today. Or even we get carried away by our association, even sometimes with other devotees, because, you know, that's in the sixth canto, the difference between, because everything as envisioned, the universal form of the sixth canto is Lakshmi and Narayan, the most beautiful poetic combination they're described, and it's also very scientifically detailed also. That Lakshmi is giving the bodies, and the Lord is expanding as Paramatma and Atma, and you know, and yet at the same time there is this definite overtone. It's very sweet of Madhura Rasa over the whole thing. So for those who can see the world in that way, that's what they see. That everything that happening is simply the interplay of the Supreme Lord and His consort. But for that, and that was why we were speaking so much earlier on the point of Vasudeva Sattva. Unless you come to Vasudeva Sattva, it's not possible to see that. And then what happens? What does this three modes of nature mean? Three guna, three qualities. Well, if you are because Krishna consciousness, the association devotees, a little practice of it, it tends to raise us up to the sattva guna very quickly. If we take it up, this is what Narada Muni explains. I believe that's coming in further cantos. But I believe this is in his explanation to Maharaj Yudhisthira. That actually the material sattva guna is the first goal. Rajaguna, tamaguna, if you're in those lower modes. You see, sometimes I mention, because of the books Maharaj wants me to write, so I've been doing a lot of reading, and sometimes I mention about, you know, they're excavating more and more and more. The remnants of Vedic civilization as far over as Anatolia, which means the coastline of Turkey facing Greece. And then you find in the Vedic scriptures, in the oldest part of the Vedas, where they talk about the Yavanas or the Greeks, they say, they describe them as very wise and very noble. But then as time goes on, I think that's like Rig Vedic times, but as you go through the Vedas and get into the Puranas, the Vedic opinion of the Greeks starts to go down and down and down. But many ideas, you know, of Greek philosophy obviously come from the Vedas, and they found remnants of Vedic civilization where the names of Vedic gods are inscribed upon temples that they dug up in Turkey and in the Middle East, and now they're looking for several more. So why did these cultures die off? Because they succumbed to the lower modes of nature. They, by doing yajnas, you know, just like the Parsi religion, there's still a few thousand of them, I think, only left in Bombay. But that's the remnants of a great religion that covered Iran, the country of Iran, which is also Aryabhatta. Prabhupada said that it was once part of India. Because up there also there are seven holy rivers, which are now, I think, in Kazakhstan. The Oxus River. Anyway, there's actually seven rivers which were also considered holy there too. Because you see, it's just like in America, we have a city called Memphis, Tennessee. Now, Memphis is originally an ancient, very, very ancient capital. Capital or seat of Egyptian culture. And it's very interesting to note that in Memphis, there was a colony of Indians that were living there at least 500 BC, because they dug up and they found their deities, and they were not Egyptian deities, they were Indian. They were worshipping the Indian demigods, and they were living in Egypt, particularly in Memphis. And now in America we have a place called Memphis, so it's quite a bit different city. I wouldn't recommend you even go there. It's the home of all the crazy music that has emanated from America. You know, famously, Memphis is one of the birthplaces of that. Anyway, but you see, why did the pioneers name that place when it was just a pasturing ground and a couple farm buildings in Memphis? Because someone among them must have been thinking great things of the ancient Egyptian civilization. So in the same way, in the ancient world, what was originally here in Bart Varsha was carried out to other places where people would accept Vedic culture. And you'll find there other there is a, in the Avestan language of ancient Iran, Hapta Hindu. There were seven sacred rivers there. Not the ones in the Punjab, but over in the part. And that region was called in the ancient Vedas Pallavi. And that last Shah of Iran who was kicked out, he declared himself, just out of false ego, that he's reestablishing the Pahlavi dynasty. You see? And I guess that's why he didn't last very long, because he had no lineage to that family at all. And they're mentioned in the Vedic scriptures, the Pahlavis. So they were part of Vedic culture. And they used to worship the fire. Every day, they had a caste of Brahmins, they're called the Magas, I think I mentioned. The three Magi, the three wise men, came to see Jesus. They had been sent bedus. Come from the east. There were these Magha Brahmanas who, by astrological calculation, could understand that a great soul had been born in Palestine, which is not so far away from Iran. And so they rode on camels just to give gifts to the Lord Jesus Christ. And and then in the Rig Veda, this personality, Jarasabda, appeared, who's known as Zoroaster. And he changed everything around, and the Magha Brahmanas started to follow him, and what they started to do, what we call, because originally, this is an interesting point, Asura, the original word for Asura, actually means God, the Supreme Lord. Because Asu means breath. And in the Vedanta, that's one of the descriptions. Actually, it more than likely is an address of Lord Anantadev, because he is the original prana. You know, in the Bhagavatam, the example in the Puranga of the five-headed serpent. So he's an expansion of Lord Anantashesh. The sun actually follows the track of the body of Lord Ananta, if you didn't know, and the moon, because he's also wrapped around the universe. We have one Shila upstairs where you can see that. You see this, the universe enclosed, and then you see coming out of the top the multi-heads of the Lord. Anantashesh, it's Anantashila. So he also encloses the whole world. And so his body is the subtle pathway that the sun and the moon follow on their course. So this is macrocosmic. But we have prana inside of us. We have the 14 planetary systems inside of us. We have yes, the original prana, the original asura in our heart as the Lord, the source of all prana, the controller of prana. It is said he controls this body. The pranas are his energies, his expanded energies. And they are the devatas. So, but then when a powerful personality, because there are so many levels of devatas, when there's the Supreme Lord, and then he has his particular agents expanded in the Trimurti, for example, Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, and then each one of them have their troops to take the literal meaning of the word Gana, from the Shaivites, it means Lord Shiva's troops, the Shaiva Ganas, headed by Ganesh, Lord Ganesh. And there you have, I think, nine varieties. And then you have all kinds of pitris. It's pitris, even the great sages in Janaloka have their pitris, you see. They're all named. And they're not all just in this one loka called pitris. That's for the human beings. That's the Manushya pitris. But there are many, many other kinds of pitris. And there's also the bhuma? The fumes from the sacrificial fire, those are the pitris of the barbarians, of the outside. Even they have pitris, and even they can be included. The Brahmins might include them, you know, especially if they're living in a place where there's a lot of... The word barbara is originally a Sanskrit word, barbarian. So for their benefit too, there might be an offering. And the fumes that come out of the side of the fire, you know, kind of makes everyone cough, that was said to go to the pitris of the barbarous, the people not even following Vedic culture. Even they'd get benefit, you see? So even these brahmanas who are making these sacrifices, that was for the benefit of all people. We hear that again and again in the Bhagavatam. But the other sense of asura, demon, asura. Asura. Sura means one who follows the sun, Surya Narayan, the Supreme Lord. The sun is the eye of Krishna. So one who is in darkness, who chooses, and that was at a certain stage of creation also. That's a historical event where all these persons who could have been called Sura, Asura, it didn't make any difference. Then the difference when, for some reason, why, and I'm coming back to my original point, what reason? The modes of material nature. And where does it start? Because when we read about this in the Devi Yuga, that means the first day of Brahma, it happened. There was division. There was duality, dvandva, moha. The Lord uses this term in the Bhagavad Gita. So, we're in the sattva guna, material sattva guna, feeling very good about ourselves as devotees. Yes, I'm well situated, I'm advanced. Just see, people were bowing down to me today. So I went over to the temple, the first time I've been in the temple for a long time, and two persons came and put garlands on me, so I took them immediately off and put them in my bag and gave them to someone else. But you know, you get a few garlands and you start to think, yeah. And then that's the false ego. And that's an example of duality, because what starts to creep up is another mode of nature. You see, the mode of ignorance. You still think it's the mode of goodness. You can't see, because you're in material consciousness, because that's all the material mode of goodness is. It's still material consciousness. As Maharaj was explaining, I think we were quite elaborately explaining some days ago about that. And it's very important for us to understand these things carefully for our own spiritual life. And why Vasudev Sattva is so important, because that is the Sattva Guna where there is no duality, because the consciousness is fixed on Krishna. Now, it may not be fixed on Krishna as, you know, at the highest level of understanding, like, what is that, Ekadasha Swarup, the 11 symptoms of my gopi form in Vrindavan. That would be very wonderful if we could all be having that now. But as soon as you start to think of jumping to that, watch out, because that is the sahaja mistake. They think you can just jump right in. But the Bhagavatam is taking us, leading us along the path of self-purification. So my point is that no one should ever think that any part of the Bhagavatam is irrelevant for them. Because of this principle of macrocosm, mesocosm, and microcosm, or in other words, the great universe, so we might think, wow, you know, what's going on in Kailash, or you know, such a loka, really, what does it have to do with me? Or, and the mesocosm, the society, even there, we may think, well, there's, even we may think in ISKCON, the society of ISKCON, which is directly the social form of the Lord, and extendedly in an unscientific way, the whole world society is. So even there we may say, well, I don't find so much there that I'm really involved with because of my the Dharma that I have. But then what about you as an individual? And there was a very nice talk we were having about Charul Maharaj this morning, that ISKCON has to come to this. He can be a very outspoken person when he's with the right person, like me. Then he always says, this is just between you and me. But anyway, I just want to generalize without quoting the exact things he said. Dr. Charul Maharaj was stressing on the importance of we have to come to the point of recognizing the, because the individual is the unit. If we're going to have a movement, then the individual is the unit. And if the units are out of order, then what is the question of the social order? You see? How will the social order fit together if the units are all out of order? And that is why the great Vedic civilization once spanned. I've been reading books which includes, and Prabhupada even said this, the civilizations of South America. It's now being scientifically proven. They're much older than they used to be thought of, going back thousands and thousands of years BC. And they're built on the same Shilpa Shastra mathematical principles as the temples of India and the pyramids of Egypt and the temples of Assyria and Babylonia. They all had the same mathematics. They were all in tune with the movements of the planets. And all those cultures, they had expert astrologers. Of course, I don't want to scare you, but according to the Mayan calendar, there's going to be a tremendous devastation in the year, I think, 212. 2012, which is only about 5 years away. Of course, they were Mayans, that we, you know, we don't know, but keep in mind. They spoke of end of world ages, and one is supposed to come in the year 212, according to them. But at least not according to Vedic astrology. But there, you know, devastations do come periodically. So anyway, the point is that because people lost sight of themselves within the scheme of Vedic culture by not going beyond the material mode of goodness. Therefore, they succumb to duality. Therefore, you get the Varnashram Dharma turns into casteism, and you get puffed up Brahmanas and even more puffed up Kshatriyas. And Brahmanas becoming the servants of puffed up Kshatriyas. This is why Krishna came. Because the Kshatriyas were so proud of him. He came earlier as Parashuram and cut them all down. And he came again because the Bhumi was complaining. The world is overburdened by these proud monarchs who have become asuras in the sense of asura. Not interested in the Lord, but interested in how much they can exploit and enjoy and control this material world. In other words, the darkness. And this comes with the rise of false ego. And within the false ego, the three modes are there. That's particularly already will be indicated in the second canto, and especially in the third canto. There's a metacosmic false ego, which emanates. Actually, it is also explained in second canto. It emanates from Vasudeva as Sankarshan, One day we'll tell you, Maharaj, we'll let Maharaj say, tell you about this when we come to these parts, about how these four vyuhas are nothing more than the four personalities of Lord Krishna that you read about in Nectar of Devotion. And therefore, no one should think, oh, these expansions, four-armed expansions, why should we learn about them? We should only hear about, you are hearing about Krishna. When you hear about Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradumna, Aniruddha, you're hearing about his Dhirudatta, Dhiradatta, Dhiralalita,
Dhiraprashanta.
You're hearing about those four forms of Krishna. And how they have their own pastimes and also are involved in creation. Maharaj will expound upon this. We'll be a little ahead of ourselves. But all I want to say is that all these things are going inside of us. All that you read about the universe, you should not abstract in your, you know, there's no such verb as abstractize, but make abstract. Oh, that's way out there in space. Or, you know, that's the, you know, society way out beyond my concern. But what about you as a devotee? You see? And so actually, whether we carry on as the movement of Srila Prabhupada, the Krishna conscious movement, which is ordained by Srila Prabhupada, the Guru Parampara, and ultimately Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada said it will be done. But he said it's up to you to get the credit. So what is that? That's the microcosm. That's you and that's me. And that's up to how well we understand this Bhagavatam. And yes, we may be in a position where macrocosm and mesocosm at our present stage, we're just not interacting with that so much. But, you know, we all have trouble sometimes getting up in the morning. We all have trouble chanting rounds nicely. We all have trouble with our sadhana bhakti. And if you understand that not only the suras, or you can, let me go back to the original word. All the asuras are inside your body. The good ones and the bad ones. Taking the ancient meaning of the word, where there was no difference between sura and asura. Asu, as long as you have the force of life inside of you, that means Krishna is there, and all of Krishna's energies are there. And Srimad Bhagavat Brahma Samhita, that the Sanskrit just escapes me, but the verse that declares how the universes are all somewhere within the Lord, and yet the same Lord is within every universe. What does that mean? The same Lord is within every atom. What does that mean? That means within every atom are all the universes. So it certainly means within each one of you. You see, all the demigods, all the demons, they're all there. And that's why we find ourselves in duality. This is a big subject. And this is what the Bhagavatam, this is why the Bhagavatam leads us by the hand through this elaborate explanation of the Danta. The Danta is just code, but this is elaboration. And it's very important. Like last time I gave a seminar on Bhagavad psychology, I told Bhakti Chuli, he wants the book that I wrote about it, so I have to put it on a thumb drive. Got all excited about that. I heard they want a printed BTG. I don't know. But anyway, all of this is there. You want to know what real psychology is? It's in the Bhagavatam. Freud and Jung and all those guys, you know, they just got little glimmers. But the entire psychology, what is the subconscious? What is the mind? What is the waking state? What is beyond the waking state? This is all explained. And if you think that doesn't have anything to do with you, watch out! Your future in this movement may not be, may have some rough spots ahead of it. If you think, all this esoteric stuff is just way over my head, I can't get it. This is about each one of us. All right, zip.
Do you have another question? 1.5. Questions and answers in Second Canto, Chapter 1. 151. From verses 1 to 21, Sukadev Goswami answers question 27 of Srimad Bhagavatam. He continues his answer in the next chapter. Ultimately, his answer spans the whole of the Bhagavatam. Riti 2. The philosophical significance of Sukadev's answer to question 27 in six parts, as derived from the verses and purports credited in parentheses at the end of each part. So we have here, associating with devotees facilitates hearing Krishna Katha, the process and results of hearing Krishna Katha, devotional consciousness contrasts the consciousness of illusion, everyone regardless of his position should hear Krishna Katha, life is meant to prepare for death, and the preparation for death. So in associating with devotees facilitates hearing Krishna Katha. Achieving the association of devotees is Krishna's direct mercy upon his soul, for it allows one to hear Krishna Katha, invocation plus verse 1 and purports. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that when someone is actually sincere, then the super soul puts him in contact with the devotees, with the advanced souls. That's how it works. So that means there's always somebody around. It's just a matter of, if we're sincere, we'll contact. If we're not, we won't. So then we can see is that it's Krishna, here's man, Krishna's direct mercy, because the Lord himself arranges that it happens, right? It means we're just walking down the street, minding our own business, and then we bump into a devotee, or yeah, that one devotee was somewhere, maybe an airport or that, and cleaning, and somebody had bought a Gita but threw it in the garbage, and he picked it out and read it and became a devotee. And there's also other devotees. There was BTGs.
There was a devotee who became a devotee by stealing a book from a book distributor on the street.
Oh.
Because he hated devotees, so just to show how much he disliked them, he just grabbed the book out of his hand running down the street, and the devotee couldn't catch him. But then when he got back, he somehow started to read the book. And he became a devotee.
Wow. Yeah.
I just put him, when I found the Gita in the sea, some of us in the boat, something like, he found it on the sea somewhere, yeah. Something like that. Put him on it.
Floating by in a bottle.
Something like that. Yeah. It was address or something, I don't know, something like that. Mm. And became the wood in the sea.
Yeah. 2. The process and results of hearing Krishna Katha. To actually become free from misery and fear, one must focus his consciousness upon the Lord. Through hearing Krishna Katha, which is non-different from Krishna himself, one becomes free from fear, and one's consciousness, even as one works, can be focused on Krishna. This raises one to the topmost position of love for Krishna and detachment from matter, as both Sri Krishna and his Katha are transcendental. One should thus mold his life to always remember Krishna, and one should especially prepare to fix his mind upon Krishna at the time of death. Verses 5 and 6 in purports. And becoming here, we see again, free from fear, or fear and misery. Misery you're miserable when basically you're not happy. Right? When you're not gaining things that you want, when the situations that you're in are not what you would be happy with. Right? So in other words, your attachments are not working out the way you would want them to. Right? So here we see again another form of fear and attachment, or envy and attachment. Right? So then the whole point is to be absorbed in Krishna, so then being with the devotees, that facilitates that, because they always talk about Krishna. And the results, then we become freed from this material consciousness, of this trying to be the controller and the enjoyer. Right? Because we understand Krishna is the controller and Krishna is the enjoyer, and it's pretty obvious, right, in the stories. 3. Devotional consciousness contrasts the consciousness of illusion. The consciousness of one desiring to hear Krishna katha is different from those who live just for their family, working hard just to enjoy sex. Struggling with material nature, they take shelter of their family members as if these fallible soldiers were sufficient to save them from death. 2 through 4 in purports. Means everyone wants to hear something. Prabhupada mentions the birds also. If you notice in the very early morning or in the evening, just at the twilight, the birds are all making so much noise. Yeah, here's another. So all they're discussing is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Where is it available? What's going on? What's happening? Like this. So they're... But the devotional then is different. You say, because there that shelter is real. Means when there's a problem, one always goes back to a situation one was comfortable in. That's where the mind will go and take shelter. That's why if here it's mentioned the fallible soldiers, then the material situation is that if the absorption is completely there and it's not connected to Krishna, then the attachments at the time of death will take us back, or any difficult situation will take us back to those persons or those situations, because we're looking for some shelter. And they're called fallible because they won't do anything for you. Right? The thought of the mundane and the mundane are different. It means they're both mundane, but they won't give you the result. Krishna and his thought or his name are non-different. So when we take shelter of him, then we are situated in the spiritual platform, the transcendental platform. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is why these are, it's not a matter of that there's a problem with the family, because the Vedas are describing how to actually properly interact so that everybody progresses. They progress through the stages of life and come to self-realization. But the tendency is to emotionally take shelter there as a final solution. Rather than I have these emotions, they have to be directed somewhere. These people are willing to reciprocate that with me, so we make an arrangement. Does that make sense? But the whole idea is these emotions eventually have to be transferred to Krishna. Right? It's not that their emotions aren't shared with the devotees, but it means that the ultimate position has to come to Krishna. Right? We may like working with particular devotees, that's fine. That we'll always be doing that, even in the spiritual world. But ultimately, it connects back to Krishna. If we don't do that, then these fallible soldiers, they will be the ones that we actually take shelter of in times of distress. Right? And most distressing here generally is death. Right? That's like the supreme distress. You put all the distress in one place at once that it's so much you can't handle it anymore. That's called death. Right? So we have to... So here the contrast is being made. 4. Everyone, regardless of his position, should hear Krishna katha. Especially the topmost transcendentalists who are
uninterested.
I was trying to think of pun interested, but interested in puns or something, because there's a thing called chala where you change the meaning of words and then create jokes. So Krishna and his devotees do that a lot. So maybe that's the when you're absorbed in the Lord's pastimes of making puns off words, then that's the that's pun interested. Yes. So one has to come to the platform of what? Pun interestization, one's consciousness. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami offers himself as an example of an impersonalist who is attracted to Krishna katha. To advance through hearing Krishna katha, which even an impersonalist can do, and thus advance to Bhagavan realization, one must hear Krishna katha from the correct person, a realized devotee. For the result of such hearing is that the hearer's faith becomes established in Krishna. Both the speaker and the hearer must be qualified. And the hearer understands everything, not exactly intellectually, but by Krishna's mercy due to his submissive inquiries and serving mood. The hearer's main qualifications for advancing to Krishna's direct service through attachment to him by hearing about him is that he should be a devotee and possess faith in the process of devotion. One should hear the Bhagavatam from beginning to end. The
conclusion.
Okay. The conclusion is that the doubtless method of success for all. Oh, is that what the new keyboard was for?
P's in there.
Ah, but no Q's, right?
No, just
the conclusion is that the doubtless method of success for all is that one, regardless of whether he's a devotee, a materialist, a yogi, or a jnani, should hear about Krishna from authorities and then offenselessly chant about Krishna. So, yeah. So, tomorrow we'll continue. We'll take that up. No, not tomorrow. Monday. So the point is that everybody can take up Krishna consciousness, and the position to do it is through hearing, and that will perfect anyone. So, Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janita Gaur Premanandi ki.